"That's the old ox down there beneath the dais," Sir Maynard said. "They call him a huge man, but seems to me his belly is the biggest thing about him. You're a bloody giant next to him."
"Indeed, sir," said one of their companions on the bench, a sallow man, saturnine, clad in gray and green. His eyes were small and shrewd, set close together beneath thin, arching brows. A neat black beard framed his mouth to make up for his receding hair. "In such a field as these, your size alone should make you one of the most formidable competitors."
"I had heard the brute of Bracken might be coming," said another man farther down the bench.
"I think not," said the man in green and gray. "This is only a bit of jousting to celebrate his lordship's nuptials, a tilt in the yard to mark the tilt between the sheets. Hardly worth the bother for the likes of Otho Bracken."
Sir Kyle the Cat took a drink of wine.
"I'll wager my Lord of Butterwell does not take the field either. He will cheer on his champions from his lord's box in the shade."
"Then he'll see his champions fall," boasted Sir Glendon Ball, "and in the end he'll hand his egg to me."
"Sir Glendon is the son of Fireball," Sir Kyle explained to the new man. "Might we have the honor of your name, sir?"
"Sir Uthor Underleaf, the son of no one of importance."
Underleaf's garments were of good cloth, clean and well cared for, but simply cut. A silver clasp in the shape of a snail fastened his cloak.
"If your lance is the equal of your tongue, Sir Glendon, you may even give this big fellow here a contest."
Sir Glendon glanced at Dunk as the wine was being poured. "If we meet, he'll fall. I don't care how big he is." Dunk watched a server fill his wine cup.
"I am better with a sword than with a lance," he admitted, "and even better with a battle axe. Will there be a melee here?"
His size and strength would stand him in good stead in a melee, and he knew he could give as good as he got. Jousting was another matter.
"Melee at a marriage?"
Sir Kyle sounded shocked.
"That would be unseemly."
Sir Maynard gave a chuckle.
"A marriage is a melee, as any married man could tell you."
Sir Uthor chuckled.
"There's just the joust, I fear. But besides the dragon's egg, Lord Butterwell has promised 30 golden dragons for the loser of the final tilt, and 10 each for the knights defeated in the round before."
10 dragons is not so bad. 10 dragons would buy a palfrey, so Dunk would not need to ride thunder save in battle. 10 dragons would buy a suit of plate for Egg, and a proper knight's pavilion sewn with Dunk's tree and falling star.
10 dragons would mean roast goose and ham and pigeon pie.
"There are ransoms to be had as well for those who win their matches," Sir Uthor said as he hollowed out his trencher, "and I have heard it rumored that some men place wagers on the tilts. Lord Butterwell himself is not fond of taking risks, but amongst his guests are some who wager heavily."
No sooner had he spoken than Ambrose Butterwell made his entrance to a fanfare of trumpets from the minstrels' gallery. Dunk shoved to his feet with the rest as Butterwell escorted his new bride down a patterned mirrorish carpet to the dais, arm in arm. The girl was 15 and freshly flowered, her lord husband 50 and freshly widowed. She was pink and he was gray. Her bride's cloak trailed behind her, done in undy green and white and yellow. It looked so hot and heavy that Dunk wondered how she could bear to wear it. Lord Butterwell looked hot and heavy, too, with his heavy jowls and thinning flaxen hair. The bride's father followed close behind her, hand in hand with his young son. Lord Frey of the Crossing was a lean man, elegant in blue and gray, his heir, a chinless boy of 4, whose nose was dripping snot. Lords Costaine and Risley came next, with their lady wives, daughters of Lord Butterwell by his first wife.
Frey's daughters followed with their own husbands. Then came Lord Gorman Peak, Lords Smallwood and Shawnee, various lesser lords and landed knights. Amongst them, Dunk glimpsed John the Fiddler and Alan Cockshaw. Lord Alan looked to be in his cups, though the feast had not yet properly begun. By the time all of them had sauntered to the dais, the high table was as crowded as the benches. Lord Butterwell and his bride sat on plump, downy cushions in a double throne of gilded oak. The rest planted themselves in tall chairs with fancifully carved arms. On the wall behind them, two huge banners hung from the rafters, the twin towers of Frey, blue on gray, and the green and white and yellow undie of the Butterwells. It fell to Lord Frey to lead the toasts. "The king," he began simply. Sir Glendon held his wine cup out above the water basin. Dunk clanked his cup against it, and against Sir Uthor's and the rest as well. They drank.
"Lord Butterwell, our gracious host," Frey proclaimed next. "May the Father grant him long life and many sons."
They drank again.
"Lady Butterwell, the maiden bride, my darling daughter. May the mother make her fertile."
Frey gave the girl a smile.
"I shall want a grandson before the year is out. Twins would suit me even better, so churn the butter well tonight, my sweet."
Laughter rang against the rafters, and the guests drank still once more. The wine was rich and red and sweet. Then Lord Frey said,
"I give you the king's hand, Brynden Rivers. May the crone's lamp light his path to wisdom."
He lifted his goblet high and drank, together with Lord Butterwell and his bride and the others on the dais. Below the salt, Sir Glendon turned his cup over to spill its contents to the floor.
"A sad waste of good wine," said Maynard Plum.
"I do not drink to kinslayers," said Sir Glendon. "Lord Bloodraven is a sorcerer and a bastard."
"Born bastard," Sir Uthor agreed mildly. "But his royal father made him legitimate as he lay dying."
He drank deep, as did Sir Maynard and many others in the hall. Near as many lowered their cups or turned them upside down as Ball had done. Dunk's own cup was heavy in his hand.
"How many eyes does Lord Bloodraven have?" the riddle went. 1,000 eyes and 1.
Toast followed toast, some proposed by Lord Frey and some by others. They drank to young Lord Tully, Lord Butterwell's liege lord, who had begged off from the wedding. They drank to the health of Leo Longthorn, Lord of Highgarden, who was rumored to be ailing. They drank to the memory of their gallant dead.
"Aye," thought Dunk, remembering, "I'll gladly drink to them."
Sir John the Fiddler proposed the final toast.
"To my brave brothers, I know that they are smiling tonight."
Dunk had not intended to drink so much with the jousting on the morrow, but the cups were filled anew after every toast, and he found he had a thirst.
"Never refuse a cup of wine or a horn of ale," Sir Arlen had once told him. "It may be a year before you see another."
"It would have been discourteous not to toast the bride and groom," he told himself, "and dangerous not to drink to the king and his hand, with strangers all about."
Mercifully, the fiddler's toast was the last. Lord Butterwell rose ponderously to thank them for coming and promise good jousting on the morrow.
"Let the feast begin."
Suckling pig was served at the high table, a peacock roasted in its plumage, a great pike crusted with crushed almonds. Not a bite of that made it down below the salt. Instead of suckling pig, they got salt pork, soaked in almond milk, and peppered pleasantly. In place of peacock, they had capons, crisped up nice and brown and stuffed with onions, herbs, mushrooms, and roasted chestnuts. In place of pike, they ate chunks of flaky white cod in a pastry coffin with some sort of tasty brown sauce that Dunk could not quite place. There was peas porridge besides, buttered turnips,
carrots drizzled with honey, and a ripe white cheese that smelled as strong as Bennis of the Brown Shield. Dunk ate well, but all the while wondered what Egg was getting in the yard. Just in case, he slipped half a capon into the pocket of his cloak, with some hunks of bread and a little of the smelly cheese. As they ate, pipes and fiddles filled the air with sprightly tunes, and the talk turned to the morrow's jousting.
"Sir Franklin Frey is well regarded along the Green Fork," said Uthor Underleaf, who seemed to know these local heroes well. "That's him upon the dais, the uncle of the bride. Lucas Nayland is down from Hagsmire. He should not be discounted. Nor should Sir Mortimer Boggs of Crackclaw Point. Elsewise, this should be a tourney of household knights and village heroes. Kirby Pym and Galti the Green are the best of those, though neither is a match for Lord Butterwell's good son, Black Tom Heddle. A nasty bit of business, that one. He won the hand of his lordship's eldest daughter by killing three of her other suitors, it's said, and once unhorsed the Lord of Casterly Rock.
What, young Lord Tybalt? Asked Sir Maynard.
No, the old Grey Lion, the one who died in the spring.
That was how men spoke of those who had perished during the great spring sickness. He died in the spring. Tens of thousands had died in the spring, among them a king and two young princes.
"Do not slight Sir Buford Bulwer," said Kyle the Cat. "The old ox slew 40 men upon the red grass field."
"And every year his count grows higher," said Sir Maynard. "Bulwer's day is done. Look at him, past 60, soft and fat, and his right eye is good as blind."
"Do not trouble to search the hole for the champion," a voice behind Dunk said. "Here I stand, sirs. Feast your eyes."
Dunk turned to find Sir John the Fiddler looming over him, a half-smile on his lips. His white silk doublet had dagged sleeves lined with red satin, so long their points drooped down past his knees. A heavy silver chain looped across his chest, studded with huge dark amethysts whose color matched his eyes.
"The chain is worth as much as everything I own," Dunk thought.
The wine had colored Sir Glendon's cheeks and inflamed his pimples.
"Who are you to make such boasts?"
"They call me John the Fiddler."
"Are you a musician or a warrior?"
"I can make sweet song with either lance or resined bow, as it happens. Every wedding needs a singer, and every tourney needs a mystery knight. May I join you? Butterwell was good enough to place me on the dais, but I prefer the company of my fellow hedge knights to fat pink ladies and old men."
The fiddler clapped Dunk upon the shoulder.
"Be a good fellow and shove over, Sir Duncan."
Dunk shoved over.
"You are too late for food, sir."
"No matter. I know where Butterwell's kitchens are. There is still some wine, I trust."
The fiddler smelled of oranges and limes, with a hint of some strange eastern spice beneath. Nutmeg, perhaps. Dunk could not have said. What did he know of nutmeg?
"Your boasting is unseemly," Sir Glendon told the fiddler.
"Truly?
Then I must beg for your forgiveness, sir. I would never wish to give offense to any son of Fireball."
That took the youth aback.
"You know who I am? Your father's son, I hope."
"Look," said Sir Kyle the Cat, "the wedding pie!"
6 kitchen boys were pushing it through the doors upon a wide-wheeled cart. The pie was brown and crusty and immense, and there were noises coming from inside it, squeaks and squawks and thumps. Lord and Lady Butterwell descended from the dais to meet it, sword in hand. When they cut it open, 100 birds burst forth to fly around the hall. In other wedding feasts Dunk had attended, the pies had been filled with doves or songbirds, but inside this one were blue jays and skylarks, pigeons and doves, mockingbirds and nightingales, small brown sparrows, and a great red parrot.
120 sorts of birds, said Sir Kyle.
21 sorts of bird droppings, said Sir Maynard.
You have no poetry in your heart, sir.
You have shit upon your shoulder.
This is the proper way to fill a pie,
Sir Kyle sniffed, cleaning off his tunic.
The pie is meant to be the marriage, and a true marriage has in it many sorts of things, joy and grief, pain and pleasure, love and lust and loyalty. So it is fitting that there be birds of many sorts. No man ever truly knows what a new wife will bring him.
A cunt, said Plum, or what would be the point?
Dunk shoved back from the table. I need a breath of air. It was a piss he needed, truth be told, but in fine company like this, it was more courteous to talk of air. Pray excuse me.
Hurry back, sir, said the fiddler. There are jugglers yet to come, and you do not want to miss the bedding.
Outside, the night wind lapped at Dunk like the tongue of some great beast. The hard-packed earth of the yard seemed to move beneath his feet, or it might be that he was swaying. The lists had been erected in the center of the outer yard. A 3-tiered wooden viewing stand had been raised beneath the walls, so Lord Butterwell and his high-born guests would be well shaded on their cushioned seats. There were tents at both ends of the lists where the knights could don their armor, with racks of tourney lances standing ready. When the wind lifted the banners for an instant, Dunk could smell the whitewash on the tilting barrier. He set off in search of the inner ward. He had to hunt up Egg and send the boy to the master of the games to enter him in the lists. That was a squire's duty. White Walls was strange to him, however, and somehow Dunk got turned around. He found himself outside the kennels, where the hounds caught scent of him and began to bark and howl. They want to tear my throat out, he thought, or else they want the capon in my cloak. He doubled back the way he'd come, past the sept. A woman went running past, breathless with laughter, a bald knight in hard pursuit. The man kept falling until finally the woman had to come back and help him up. I should slip into the sept and ask the 7 to make that knight my first opponent, Dunk thought, but that would have been impious. What I really need is a privy, not a prayer. There were some bushes near at hand, beneath a flight of pale stone steps. Those will serve. He groped his way behind them and unlaced his breeches. His bladder had been full to bursting. The piss went on and on. Somewhere above, a door came open. Dunk heard footfalls on the steps, the scrape of boots on stone.
Beggar's feast you've laid before us. Without Bittersteel.
Bittersteel be buggered, insisted a familiar voice. No bastard can be trusted, not even him. A few victories will bring him over the water fast enough.
Lord Peak. Dunk held his breath. And his piss.
Easier to speak of victories than to win them.
This speaker had a deeper voice than Peak, a bass rumble with an angry edge to it.
Old Milkblood expected the boy to have it, and so will all the rest. Glib words and charm cannot make up for that.
A dragon would. The prince insists the egg will hatch. He dreamed it, just as he once dreamed his brothers dead. A living dragon will win us all the swords that we would want.
A dragon is one thing, a dream's another. I promise you, Bloodraven is not off dreaming. We need a warrior, not a dreamer. Is the boy his father's son?
Just do your part as promised, and let me concern myself with that. Once we have Butterwell's gold and the swords of House Frey, Harrenhal will follow, then the Brackens. Otho knows he cannot hope to stand.
The voices were fading as the speakers moved away. Dunk's piss began to flow again. He gave his cock a shake and laced himself back up.
His father's son,
he muttered. Who were they speaking of?
Fireball's son?
By the time he emerged from under the steps, the two lords were well across the yard. He almost shouted after them to make them show their faces, but thought better of it. He was alone and unarmed, and half drunk besides. Maybe more than half. He stood there frowning for a moment, then marched back to the hall. Inside, the last course had been served and the frolics had begun. One of Lord Frey's daughters played Two Hearts That Beat as One on the high harp, very badly. Some jugglers flung flaming torches at each other for a while, and some tumblers did cartwheels in the air. Lord Frey's nephew began to sing The Bear and the Maiden Fair, while Sir Kirby Pym beat out time upon the table with a wooden spoon. Others joined in until the whole hall was bellowing, A bear, a bear, all black and brown and covered with hair. Lord Caswell passed out at the table with his face in a puddle of wine, and Lady Verwell began to weep, though no one was quite certain as to the cause of her distress. All the while the wine kept flowing. The rich arbor reds gave way to local vintages, or so the fiddler said. If truth be told, Dunk could not tell the difference. There was Hippocras as well, and he tried a cup of that. It might be a year before I have another. The other hedge knights, fine fellows all, had begun to talk of women they had known. Dunk found himself wondering where Tansel was tonight. He knew where Lady Rohan was, abed at Coldmoat Castle, with old Sir Eustace beside her, snoring through his mustache, so he tried not to think of her. Do they ever think of me? He wondered. His melancholy ponderings were rudely interrupted when a troop of painted dwarfs came bursting from the belly of a wheeled wooden pig to chase Lord Butterwell's fool about the tables, walloping him with inflated pig's bladders that made rude noises every time a blow was struck. It was the funniest thing Dunk had seen in years, and he laughed with all the rest. Lord Frey's son was so taken by their antics that he joined in, pummeling the wedding guests with a bladder borrowed from a dwarf. The child had the most irritating laugh Dunk had ever heard, a high, shrill hiccup of a laugh that made him want to take the boy over a knee or throw him down a well. If he hits me with that bladder, I may do it.
"There's the lad who made this marriage,"
Sir Maynard said as the chinless urchin went screaming past. "How so?" The fiddler held up an empty wine cup and a passing server filled it. Sir Maynard glanced toward the dais where the bride was feeding cherries to her husband.
"His lordship will not be the first to butter that biscuit. His bride was deflowered by a scullion at the twins, they say. She would creep down to the kitchens to meet him. Alas, one night that little brother of hers crept down after her. When he saw them making the two-backed beast, he let out a shriek, and cooks and guardsmen came running and found Milady and her potboy coupling on the slab of marble where the cook rolls out the dough, both naked as their name day and flowered up from head to heel."
That cannot be true, Dunk thought. Lord Butterwell had broad lands and pots of yellow gold. Why would he wed a girl who'd been soiled by a kitchen scullion and give away his dragon's egg to mark the match? The Freys of the crossing were no nobler than the Butterwells. They owned a bridge instead of cows. That was the only difference. Lords, who can ever understand them? Dunk ate some nuts and pondered what he'd overheard whilst pissing. Dunk the drunk, what is it that you think you heard? He had another cup of Hippocras, since the first had tasted so good. Then he lay his head down atop his folded arms and closed his eyes, just for a moment, to rest them from the smoke. When he opened them again, half the wedding guests were on their feet and shouting, "Bed them! Bed them!" They were making such an uproar that they woke Dunk from a pleasant dream involving Tansel Tootall and the Red Widow. "Bed them! Bed them!" the calls rang out. Dunk sat up and rubbed his eyes. Sir Franklin Frey had the bride in his arms and was carrying her down the aisle, with men and boys swarming all around him. The ladies at the high table had surrounded Lord Butterwell. Lady Verwell had recovered from her grief and was trying to pull his lordship from his chair, while one of his daughters unlaced his boots and some fray woman pulled up his tunic. Butterwell was flailing at them ineffectually and laughing. He was drunk, Dunk saw, and Sir Franklin was a deal drunker. So drunk he almost dropped the bride. Before Dunk quite realized what was happening, John the Fiddler had dragged him to his feet.
"Here!" he cried out. "Let the giant carry her!"
The next thing he knew, he was climbing a tower stair with the bride squirming in his arms. How he kept his feet was beyond him. The girl would not be still, and the men were all around them, making ribald japes about flowering her up and kneading her well, whilst they pulled off her clothes. The dwarfs joined in as well. They swarmed around Dunk's legs, shouting and laughing and smacking at his calves with their bladders. It was all he could do not to trip over them. Dunk had no notion where Lord Butterwell's bedchamber was to be found, but the other men pushed and prodded him until he got there, by which time the bride was red-faced, giggling, and nearly naked, save for the stocking on her left leg, which had somehow survived the climb. Dunk was crimson, too, and not from exertion. His arousal would have been obvious if anyone had been looking, but fortunately all eyes were on the bride. Lady Butterwell looked nothing like Tansel, but having the one squirming half-naked in his arms had started Dunk thinking about the other. Tansel Tootall, that was her name. But she was not too tall for me. He wondered if he would ever find her again. There had been some nights when he thought he must have dreamed her. No, Lunk, you only dreamed she liked you. Lord Butterwell's bedchamber was large and lavish once he found it. Mirish carpets covered the floors, 100 scented candles burned in nooks and crannies, and a suit of plate inlaid with gold and gems stood beside the door. It even had its own privy set into a small stone alcove in the outer wall. When Dunk finally plopped the bride onto her marriage bed, a dwarf leapt in beside her and seized one of her breasts for a bit of a fondle. The girl let out a squeal, the men roared with laughter, and Dunk seized the dwarf by his collar and hauled him kicking off Milady. He was carrying the little man across the room to chuck him out the door when he saw the dragon's egg. Lord Butterwell had placed it on a black velvet cushion atop a marble plinth. It was much bigger than a hen's egg, though not so big as he'd imagined. Fine red scales covered its surface, shining bright as jewels by the light of lamps and candles. Dunk dropped the dwarf and picked up the egg, just to feel it for a moment. It was heavier than he'd expected. You could smash a man's head with this and never crack the shell. The scales were smooth beneath his fingers, and the deep, rich red seemed to shimmer as he turned the egg in his hands. Blood and flame, he thought, but there were gold flecks in it as well, and whorls of midnight black.
Here, you! What do you think you're doing, sir?
A knight he did not know was glaring at him, a big man with a coal-black beard and boils, but it was the voice that made him blink. A deep voice, thick with anger. It was him, the man with pique, Dunk realized as the man said,
Put that down. I'll thank you to keep your greasy fingers off his lordship's treasures, or by the seven you shall wish you had.
The other knight was not near so drunk as Dunk, so it seemed wise to do as he said. He put the egg back on its pillow very carefully and wiped his fingers on his sleeve.
I meant no harm, sir.
Dunk the Lunk, thick as a castle wall. Then he shoved past the man with the black beard and out the door. There were noises in the stairwell, glad shouts and girlish laughter. The women were bringing Lord Butterwell to his bride. Dunk had no wish to encounter them, so he went up instead of down and found himself on the tower roof beneath the stars, with the pale castle glimmering in the moonlight all around him. He was feeling dizzy from the wine, so he leaned against a parapet.
Am I going to be sick?
Why did he go and touch the dragon's egg? He remembered Tansel's puppet show and the wooden dragon that had started all the trouble there at Ashford. The memory made Dunk feel guilty, as it always did. 3 good men dead to save a hedge knight's foot. It made no sense and never had. Take a lesson from that, Lunk. It is not for the likes of you to mess about with dragons or their eggs.
It almost looks as if it's made of snow.
Dunk turned. John the Fiddler stood behind him, smiling in his silk and cloth of gold.
What's made of snow?
The castle. All that white stone in the moonlight. Have you ever been north of the Neck, Sir Duncan? I'm told it snows there even in the summer. Have you ever seen the wall?
No, my lord. Why is he going on about the wall?
That's where we were going, Aegon and me, up north, to Winterfell.
Would that I could join you. You could show me the way.
The way?
Dunk frowned.
It's right up the King's Road. If you stay to the road and keep going north, you can't miss it.
The fiddler laughed. I suppose not, though you might be surprised at what some men can miss. He went to the parapet and looked out across the castle. They say those Northmen are savage folk, and their woods are full of wolves.
My lord, why did you come up here?
Alan was seeking for me, and I did not care to be found. He grows tiresome when he drinks, does Alan? I saw you slip away from that bedchamber of horrors and slipped out after you. I've had too much wine, I grant you, but not enough to face a naked Butterwell. He gave Dunk an enigmatic smile. I dreamed of you, Sir Duncan, before I even met you. When I saw you on the road, I knew your face at once. It was as if we were old friends. Dunk had the strangest feeling then, as if he had lived this all before. I dreamed of you, he said. My dreams are not like yours, Sir Duncan. Mine are true.
You dreamed of me?
He said, in a voice made thick by wine.
What sort of dream?
Why, the fiddler said, I dreamed that you were all in white from head to heel, with a long pale cloak flowing from those broad shoulders. You were a white sword, sir, a sworn brother of the King's Guard, the greatest knight in all the 7 kingdoms. And you lived for no other purpose but to guard and serve and please your king. He put a hand on Dunk's shoulder. You have dreamed the same dream, I know you have. He had. It was true. The first time the old man let me hold his sword.
Every boy dreams of serving in the King's Guard.
Only 7 boys grow up to wear the white cloak, though. Would it please you to be one of them?
Me?
Dunk shrugged away the lordling's hand, which had begun to knead his shoulder.
It might, or not.
The knights of the King's Guard served for life and swore to take no wife and hold no lands. I might find Tansel again someday. Why shouldn't I have a wife and sons?
It makes no matter what I dream. Only a king can make a King's Guard knight.
I suppose that means I'll have to take the throne, then. I would much rather be teaching you to fiddle.
You're drunk, and the crow once called the raven black.
Wonderfully drunk. Wine makes all things possible, Sir Duncan. You'd look a god in white, I think. But if the color does not suit you, perhaps you would prefer to be a lord. Dunk laughed in his face.
No, I'd sooner sprout big blue wings and fly. One's as likely as the other.
Now you mock me. A true knight would never mock his king. The fiddler sounded hurt. I hope you will put more faith in what I tell you when you see the dragon hatch.
A dragon will hatch? A living dragon? What, here?
I dreamed it. This pale white castle, you,
a dragon bursting from an egg. I dreamed it all, just as I once dreamed of my brothers lying dead. They were 12 and 7, so they laughed at me and died. I am 22 now, and I trust my dreams.
Dunk was remembering another tourney, remembering how he had walked through the soft spring rains with another princeling.
I dreamed of you and a dead dragon,
Egg's brother Dayron said to him,
a great beast, huge, with wings so large they could cover this meadow. It had fallen on top of you, but you were alive and the dragon was dead.
And so was he, poor Balor. Dreams were a treacherous ground on which to build.
As you say, my lord, he told the fiddler. Pray excuse me.
Where are you going, sir?
To my bed, to sleep.
I'm drunk as a dog.
Be my dog, sir. The night's alive with promise. We can howl together and wake the very gods.
What do you want of me?
Your sword. I would make you mine own man and raise you high. My dreams do not lie, Sir Duncan. You will have that white cloak, and I must have the dragon's egg. I must. My dreams have made that plain. Perhaps the egg will hatch. Or else...
Behind them, the door banged open violently.
There he is, my lord!
A pair of men-at-arms stepped onto the roof. Lord Gorman Peake was just behind them.
Gormy! The fiddler drawled. Why, what are you doing in my bedchamber, my lord?
It is a roof, sir, and you have had too much wine.
Lord Gorman made a sharp gesture, and the guards moved forward.
Allow us to help you to that bed.
You are jousting on the morrow, pray recall. Kirby Pym can prove a dangerous foe.
I had hoped to joust with good Sir Duncan here.
Peake gave Dunk an unsympathetic look.
Later, perhaps. For your first tilt, you have drawn Sir Kirby Pym.
Then Pym must fall. So must they all. The mystery knight prevails against all challengers, and wonder dances in his wake.
A guardsman took the fiddler by the arm.
Sir Duncan, it seems that we must part, he called as they helped him down the steps.
Only Lord Gorman remained upon the roof with Dunk.
Hedge knight, he growled, did your mother never teach you not to reach your hand into the dragon's mouth?
I never knew my mother, my lord.
That would explain it.
What did he promise you?
A lordship. A white cloak. Big blue wings.
Here's my promise. 3 feet of cold steel through your belly if you speak a word of what just happened.
Dunk shook his head to clear his wits. It did not seem to help. He bent double at the waist and retched. Some of the vomit spattered Peake's boots.
The lord cursed. Hedge knights, he exclaimed in disgust. You have no place here. No true knight would be so discourteous as to turn up uninvited. But you creatures of the hedge,
we are wanted nowhere and turn up everywhere, my lord.
The wine had made Dunk bold, else he would have held his tongue. He wiped his mouth with the back of his hand.
Try and remember what I told you, sir. It will go ill for you if you do not.
Lord Peake shook the vomit off his boot. Then he was gone. Dunk leaned against the parapet again. He wondered who was madder, Lord Gorman or the fiddler. By the time he found his way back to the hall, only Maynard Plum remained of his companions.
Was there any flour on her teats when you got the small clothes off her?
He wanted to know. Dunk shook his head, poured himself another cup of wine, tasted it, and decided that he had drunk enough. Butterwell's stewards had found rooms in the keep for the lords and ladies, and beds in the barracks for their retinues. The rest of the guests had their choice between a straw pallet in the cellar or a spot of ground beneath the western walls to raise their pavilions. The modest sailcloth tent Dunk had acquired in Stony Sept was no pavilion, but it kept the rain and sun off. Some of his neighbors were still awake, the silken walls of their pavilions glowing like colored lanterns in the night. Laughter came from inside a blue pavilion covered with sunflowers, and the sounds of love from one striped in white and purple. Egg had set up their own tent a bit apart from the others. Maester and the two horses were hobbled nearby, and Dunk's arms and armor had been neatly stacked against the castle walls. When he crept into the tent, he found his squire sitting cross-legged by a candle, his head shining as he peered over a book. "Reading books by candlelight will make you blind." Reading remained a mystery to Dunk, though the lad had tried to teach him.
"I need the candlelight to see the words, sir."
"Do you want a clout in the ear? What book is that?" Dunk saw bright colors on the page, little painted shields hiding in amongst the letters.
"A roll of arms, sir."
"Looking for the fiddler? You won't find him. They don't put hedge knights in those rolls, just lords and champions."
"I wasn't looking for him. I saw some other sigils in the yard. Lord Sunderland is here, sir. He bears the heads of three pale ladies on undy green and blue."
"A sister man? Truly?" The three sisters were islands in the Bight. Dunk had heard septons say that the isles were sinks of sin and avarice. Sisterton was the most notorious smuggler's den in all of Westeros. "He comes a long way. He must be kin to Butterwell's new bride."
"He isn't, sir."
"Then he's here for the feast. They eat fish on the Three Sisters, don't they? A man gets sick of fish."
"Did you get enough to eat? I brought you half a capon and some cheese."
Dunk rummaged in the pocket of his cloak.
"They fed us ribs, sir."
Egg's nose was deep in the book.
"Lord Sunderland fought for the Black Dragon, sir."
"Like old Sir Eustace? He wasn't so bad, was he?"
"No, sir," Egg said, "but..."
"I saw the dragon's egg."
Dunk squirreled the food away with their hard bread and salt beef.
"It was red, mostly. Does Lord Bloodraven own a dragon's egg as well?"
Egg lowered his book.
"Why would he? He's baseborn."
"Bastardborn, not baseborn."
Bloodraven had been born on the wrong side of the blanket, but he was noble on both sides. Dunk was about to tell Egg about the men he'd overheard when he noticed his face.
"What happened to your lip?"
"A fight, sir."
"Let me see it."
"It only bled a little. I dabbed some wine on it."
"Who were you fighting?"
"Some other squires. They said..."
"Never mind what they said. What did I tell you?"
"To hold my tongue and make no trouble."
The boy touched his broken lip.
"They called my father a kinslayer, though."
"He is, lad, though I do not think he meant it."
Dunk had told Egg 50 times not to take such words to heart.
"You know the truth. Let that be enough."
They had heard such talk before, in wine sinks and low taverns and around campfires in the woods. The whole realm knew how Prince Maekar's mace had felled his brother Baelor Breakspear at Ashford Meadow. Talk of plots was only to be expected.
"If they knew Prince Maekar was your father, they would never have said such things."
"Behind your back, yes, but never to your face. And what did you tell these other squires instead of holding your tongue?"
Egg looked abashed.
"That Prince Baelor's death was just a mishap. Only when I said Prince Maekar loved his brother Baelor, Sir Adam's squire said he loved him to death. And Sir Malor's squire said he meant to love his brother Ares the same way. That was when I hit him. I hit him good."
"I ought to hit you good. A fat ear to go with that fat lip. Your father would do the same if he were here.
Do you think Prince Maekar needs a little boy to defend him? What did he tell you when he sent you off with me?"
"To serve you faithfully as your squire, and not flinch from any task or hardship."
"And what else?"
to obey the king's laws, the rules of chivalry, and you.
And what else?
To keep my hair shaved or dyed?
The boy said with obvious reluctance.
And tell no man my true name.
Dunk nodded. How much wine had this boy drunk?
He was drinking barley beer.
You see, the barley beer was talking. Words are wind, Egg. Just let them blow on past you.
Some words are wind.
The boy was nothing if not stubborn.
Some words are treason. This is a traitor's tourney, sir.
What, all of them? Dunk shook his head. If it was true, that was a long time ago. The Black Dragon's dead, and those who fought with him are fled or pardoned. And it's not true. Lord Butterwell's sons fought on both sides.
That makes him half a traitor, sir.
16 years ago. Dunk's mellow, whiny haze was gone. He felt angry and near sober. Lord Butterwell's steward is the master of the games, a man named Cosgrove. Find him and enter my name for the lists. No, wait. Hold back my name. With so many lords on hand, one of them might recall Sir Duncan the Tall from Ashford Meadow. Enter me as the Gallows Knight. The small folk loved it when a mystery knight appeared at a tourney.
Egg fingered his fat lip. The Gallows Knight, sir?
For the shield.
Yes, but...
Go do as I said. You have read enough for one night.
Dunk pinched the candle out between his thumb and forefinger.
The sun rose hot and hard, implacable. Waves of heat rose shimmering off the white stones of the castle. The air smelled of baked earth and torn grass, and no breath of wind stirred the banners that drooped atop the keep and gatehouse, green and white and yellow. Thunder was restless, in a way that Dunk had seldom seen before. The stallion tossed his head from side to side as Egg was tightening his saddle cinch. He even bared his big square teeth at the boy. It is so hot, Dunk thought. Too hot for man or mount.
A warhorse does not have a placid disposition even at the best of times.
The mother herself would be foul-tempered in this heat. In the center of the yard, the jousters began another run. Sir Harbert rode a golden courser barded in black and decorated with the red and white serpents of House Page. Sir Franklin, a sorrel whose gray silk trapper bore the twin towers of Frey. When they came together, the red and white lance cracked clean in two, and the blue one exploded into splinters, but neither man lost his seat. A cheer went up from the viewing stand and the guardsmen on the castle walls, but it was short and thin and hollow. It is too hot for cheering.
Dunk mopped sweat from his brow.
It is too hot for jousting.
His head was beating like a drum.
Let me win this tilt and one more, and I will be content.
The knights wheeled their horses about at the end of the lists and tossed down the jagged remains of their lances, the fourth pair they had broken.
Three too many.
Dunk had put off donning his armor as long as he dared, yet already he could feel his small clothes sticking to his skin beneath his steel.
There are worse things than being soaked with sweat, he told himself, remembering the fight on the White Lady when the Iron Men had come swarming over her side. He had been soaked in blood by the time that day was done.
Fresh lances in hand, Page and Frey put their spurs into their mounts once again. Clods of cracked dry earth sprayed back from beneath their horses' hooves with every stride. The crack of the lances breaking made Dunk wince.
Too much wine last night, and too much food.
He had some vague memory of carrying the bride up the steps and meeting John the Fiddler and Lord Peak upon a roof.
What was I doing on a roof?
There had been talk of dragons, he recalled, or dragons' eggs or something, but... A noise broke his reverie, part roar and part moan. Dunk saw the golden horse trotting riderless to the end of the lists,
as Sir Harbert Page rolled feebly on the ground.
Two more before my turn.
The sooner he unhorsed Sir Uthor, the sooner he could take his armor off, have a cool drink, and rest. He should have at least an hour before they called him forth again. Lord Butterwell's portly herald climbed to the top of the viewing stand to summon the next pair of jousters.
"Sir Argrave the Defiant," he called, "a knight of Nunny in service to Lord Butterwell of White Walls. Sir Glendon Flowers, the knight of the Pussy Willows, come forth and prove your valor."
A gale of laughter rippled through the viewing stands. Sir Argrave was a spare, leathery man, a seasoned household knight in dinted gray armor, riding an unbarded horse. Dunk had known his sort before. Such men were tough as old roots and knew their business. His foe was young Sir Glendon, mounted on his wretched stot and armored in a heavy mail hauberk and open-faced iron half-helm. On his arm, his shield displayed his father's fiery sigil. "He needs a breastplate and a proper helm," Dunk thought. "A blow to the head or chest could kill him, clad like that." Sir Glendon was plainly furious at his introduction. He wheeled his mount in an angry circle and shouted, "I am Glendon Ball, not Glendon Flowers. Mock me at your peril, herald, I warn you. I have hero's blood." The herald did not deign to reply, but more laughter greeted the young knight's protest. "Why are they laughing at him?" Dunk wondered aloud. "Is he a bastard, then?" Flowers was the surname given to bastards born of noble parents in the Reach. "And what was all that about pussy willows?"
"I could find out, sir," said Egg.
"No, it is none of our concern. Do you have my helm?"
Sir Argrave and Sir Glendon dipped their lances before Lord and Lady Butterwell. Dunk saw Butterwell lean over and whisper something in his bride's ear. The girl began to giggle.
"Yes, sir."
Egg had donned his floppy hat to shade his eyes and keep the sun off his shaved head. Dunk liked to tease the boy about that hat, but just now he wished he had one like it. Better a straw hat than an iron one beneath this sun. He pushed his hair out of his eyes, eased the great helm down into place with two hands, and fastened it to his gorget. The lining stank of old sweat, and he could feel the weight of all that iron on his neck and shoulders. His head throbbed from last night's wine.
"Sir," Egg said, "it's not too late to withdraw. If you lose thunder and your armor..."
"I would be done as a knight." "Why should I lose?" Dunk demanded.
Sir Argrave and Sir Glendon had ridden to opposite ends of the lists.
"It is not as if I faced the laughing storm. Is there some knight here like to give me trouble?"
"Almost all of them, sir."
"I owe you a clout in the ear for that. Sir Uthor is 10 years my senior and half my size."
Sir Argrave lowered his visor. Sir Glendon did not have a visor to lower.
"You have not ridden in a tilt since Ashford Meadow, sir."
"Insolent boy. I've trained."
Not so faithfully as he might have, to be sure. When he could, he took his turn riding at Quinton's or Rings, where such were available. And sometimes he would command Egg to climb a tree and hang a shield or barrel stave beneath a well-placed limb for them to tilt at.
"You're better with a sword than with a lance," Egg said. "With an axe or a mace, there's few to match your strength."
There was enough truth in that to annoy Dunk all the more.
"There is no contest for swords or maces," he pointed out,
as Fireball's son and Sir Argrave the Defiant began their charge.
"Go get my shield."
Egg made a face, then went to fetch the shield. Across the yard, Sir Argrave's lance struck Sir Glendon's shield and glanced off, leaving a gouge across the comet. But Ball's coronal found the center of his foe's breastplate with such force that it burst his saddle cinch. Knight and saddle both went tumbling to the dust. Dunk was impressed, despite himself.
The boy jousts almost as well as he talks. He wondered if that would stop them laughing at him. A trumpet rang loud enough to make Dunk wince. Once more, the herald climbed his stand.
Sir Joffrey of House Caswell, Lord of Bitterbridge and Defender of the Fords, Sir Kyle, the Cat of Misty Moor, come forth and prove your valor.
Sir Kyle's armor was of good quality, but old and worn, with many dints and scratches.
The mother has been merciful to me, Sir Duncan, he told Dunk and Egg on his way to the lists. I am sent against Lord Caswell, the very man I came to see.
If any man upon the field felt worse than Dunk this morning, it had to be Lord Caswell, who had drunk himself insensible at the feast. It's a wonder he can sit a horse after last night, said Dunk.
The victory is yours, Sir.
Oh, no! Sir Kyle smiled a silken smile.
The cat who wants his bowl of cream must know when to purr and when to show his claws, Sir Duncan. If his lordship's lance so much as scrapes against my shield, I shall go tumbling to the earth. Afterwards, when I bring my horse and armor to him, I will compliment his lordship on how much his prowess has grown since I made him his first sword. That will recall me to him, and before this day is out, I shall be a Caswell man again, a knight of Bitterbridge.
There is no honor in that, Dunk almost said, but he bit his tongue instead. Sir Kyle would not be the first hedge knight to trade his honor for a warm place by the fire.
As you say, he muttered, good fortune to you, or bad if you prefer.
Lord Joffrey Caswell was a weedy youth of 20, though admittedly he looked rather more impressive in his armor than he had last night when he'd been face down in a puddle of wine. A yellow centaur was painted on his shield, pulling on a longbow. The same centaur adorned the white silk trappings of his horse and gleamed atop his helm in yellow gold.
A man who has a centaur for his sigil should ride better than that.
Dunk did not know how well Sir Kyle wielded a lance, but from the way Lord Caswell sat his horse, it looked as though a loud cough might unseat him.
All the cat need do is ride past him very fast.
Egg held Thunder's bridle as Dunk swung himself ponderously up into the high, stiff saddle. As he sat there waiting, he could feel the eyes upon him. They are wondering if the big hedge knight is any good. Dunk wondered that himself. He would find out soon enough. The Cat of Misty Moor was true to his word. Lord Caswell's lance was wobbling all the way across the field, and Sir Kyle's was ill-aimed. Neither man got his horse up past a trot. All the same, the cat went tumbling when Lord Joffrey's coronal chanced to whack his shoulder. I thought all cats landed gracefully upon their feet, Dunk thought as the hedge knight rolled in the dust. Lord Caswell's lance remained unbroken. As he brought his horse around, he thrust it high into the air repeatedly, as if he'd just unseated Leo Longthorn or the Laughing Storm. The cat pulled off his helm and went chasing down his horse.
My shield, Dunk said to Egg.
The boy handed it up. He slipped his left arm through the strap and closed his hand around the grip. The weight of the kite shield was reassuring, though its length made it awkward to handle, and seeing the hanged man once again gave him an uneasy feeling. Those are ill-omened arms. He resolved to get the shield repainted as soon as he could.
May the warrior grant me a smooth course and a quick victory, he prayed, as Butterwell's herald was clambering up the steps once more. Sir Uthor Underleaf, his voice rang out, the Gallows Knight, come forth and prove your valor.
Be careful, sir, Egg warned as he handed Dunk a tourney lance, a tapered wooden shaft 12 feet long, ending in a rounded iron coronal in the shape of a closed fist. The other squires say Ser Uthor has a good seat, and he's quick.
Quick? Dunk snorted. He has a snail on his shield. How quick can he be?
He put his heels into Thunder's flanks and walked the horse slowly forward, his lance upright. One victory and I am no worse than before. Two will leave us well ahead. Two is not too much to hope for in this company. He had been fortunate in the lots, at least. He could as easily have drawn the old ox or Ser Kirby Pym or some other local hero. Dunk wondered if the Master of Games was deliberately matching the Hedge Knights against each other, so no lordling need suffer the ignominy of losing to one in the first round. It does not matter. One foe at a time, that was what the old man always said. Ser Uthor is all that should concern me now. They met beneath the viewing stand, where Lord and Lady Butterwell sat on their cushions in the shade of the castle walls. Lord Frey was beside them, dandling his snot-nosed son on one knee. A row of serving girls was fanning them, yet Lord Butterwell's damask tunic was stained beneath the arms, and his lady's hair was limp from perspiration. She looked hot, bored, and uncomfortable, but when she saw Dunk, she pushed out her chest in a way that turned him red beneath his helm. He dipped his lance to her and her lord husband. Ser Uthor did the same. Butterwell wished them both a good tilt. His wife stuck out her tongue. It was time. Dunk trotted back to the south end of the lists. 80 feet away, his opponent was taking up his position as well. His gray stallion was smaller than Thunder, but younger and more spirited. Ser Uthor wore green enamel plate and silvery chainmail. Streamers of green and gray silk flowed from his rounded bassinet, and his green shield bore a silver snail. Good armor and a good horse means a good ransom if I unseat him.